You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com. We're joined by a fire correspondent talking about America's favorite division. I'm joined by Alvin Gonzalez, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. Had a couple of great pieces this week on the website. Alvin, I want to start by asking you about your midway report. The second base job now, as we enter the meat and bones of spring training, completely wide open still, huh? Nobody has taken the position and run with it yet, huh?
No, not really. And, you know, Richard, as I stated on there, I'm not really sure if that's a good thing. I think that Josh Rutledge is the favorite for the job. He came in with the most experience. He's been the guy who's been always working out with the everyday guys. He was the guy the Angels wanted to trade for. Granted, they initially wanted him as a utility infielder because they had Howie Kendrick at the time. But I think of the four of them competing, he has the most experience, and I think they're going to give him the first crack. But I don't, you know, my stance on second base hasn't really changed since the beginning. I feel like either a lot of people are going to end up playing second base, and the Angels are just going to go with matchups or whoever's hot, or they're going to trade for somebody. I wouldn't be surprised either way. I'm not sure if they're going to actually go out and try to trade for somebody now. Seems like they really want to give this mix a shot first. And plus, you know, there's not that many teams looking to part ways with pieces before the season even starts. So it's not like it's a dire situation or anything like that. The Angels were never expecting to replicate Howie Kendrick's production there. But, you know, none of the guys have really stuck out. I guess maybe not in a bad way, not in a good way. Rutledge hasn't really hit yet. Grant Green has struggled a little bit defensively. Johnny Giovatella is just still trying to find his way. Taylor Featherston's actually looked pretty good. He's the guy that they picked up in the Rule 5. But he's kind of being groomed as a utility guy, and he hasn't played above AA yet. So that part of it is pretty significant.
And I wanted to ask you about the rotation. We think Garrett Richards will be back in mid-April. When he's back, do the Angels want both Andrew Haney and Nick Tropiano to be starters in the minor leagues, if not the major leagues? Or would one of those guys be a bullpen option?
I don't think there's any chance that one of those guys is a bullpen option. The big thing about the Angels this year is they have starting pitching depth. They want to preserve that starting pitching depth. And, you know, once you move one of those young guys to the bullpen, you lose that depth automatically. You lose that length with them. They're no longer options for you in the rotation because they're not stretched out like starting pitchers. And, I mean, I think you're just really setting them up to fail, too. You're stunning their growth. They've never had experience in the bullpen. There's no doubt that both of them are going to stay stretched out, whether it's in AAA or in the major leagues. And I think when Garrett Richards comes back, the Angels are going to have a big decision. Just thinking ahead here, I know we're jumping the gun a little bit, but it looks like they're going to have a pretty big decision to make with regards to Hector Santiago. Do they keep him in the rotation and send either Andrew Heaney or Tropiano down to AAA? Do they move him to the bullpen where he's kind of a redundant piece because the Angels already have a lefty who gives you length out of the bullpen and Cesar Ramos? Or do you use him as trade bait? I mean, I really wouldn't be surprised with any of those three scenarios. That's going to be a big decision. I think the good thing for the Angels is it looks like they're not going to have to make that decision until about the middle of April because they're still easing Garrett through his rehab process.
Now, you're a guy that has seen Mike Trout virtually every game of his career. And even you are impressed with what you've seen this spring. He's hitting, wait for it, 545.
Is that good, Richard? That's good, right?
Go ahead and just say something about Mike Trout that you haven't said before. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he hasn't really skipped a beat at all. And, you know, it's funny. Everybody kept talking about, oh, is he gonna cut down the strikeouts? Is he gonna steal more bases? Well, there you have it, folks. He has as many steals as strikeouts so far. So, what else do you want from Mike Trout? What more do you want Mike Trout to you? Whatever you want, he'll deliver and he'll do it for you.
it's just incredible.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? Everybody always talks about how spring training numbers don't really mean anything. And you know what? To a certain extent, that's true. But I'm of the belief that good hitters hit no matter what time of year it is. And if you look back at Albert Pujols' career, every spring training, he was off the chart. Did that mean anything? No. It was just an indication that he's just a good hitter. And it doesn't matter what time of year it is. It doesn't matter if he just got out of bed or what. He's going to hit. Mike Trout is going to hit. I'm still going to be really interested when the season starts and guys start trying to expose his weakness again in terms of giving him those fastballs chest high. He's been working on that in the batting cage, mostly with the tee. They have a tee here that they pretty much set up for high pitches for Mike Trout, just so that, you know, he gets a feel for where that pitch is located, how his swing has to be. That's been one of his focuses this spring, because he knows that once the season starts again, they're going to start pitching him up again. You know, I don't think guys are giving away the game plan in spring training about how they're going to attack him. When the season starts, he could expect those rising fastballs again, and he's going to have to either lay off them or find a way to drive those pitches.
Excuse me, Aldis. When he asked this of Felix Hernandez a couple of days ago, and like, you feel stupid asking the question because the guy's almost perfect, but other than the strikeouts and the high fastball, and that's a big deal, obviously, were there parts of his game that he still feels he can get better at?
I think the only part of Mike, because look, we'll go stolen bases first. I don't think that's an element of Mike Trout's game that needs to improve. You talk to some guys, they would prefer to not have Mike Trout steal many bases. I talked to Tim Salmon about this. That's a lot of wear and tear, you know, for a guy who plays center field already, who's relied on so much. It exerts a lot of energy to constantly steal bases. It sets yourself up for injury. There's a lot of guys that prefer that Mike Trout not steal as many bases. And I think the fact that he has so little is actually an indication of his maturity, because he still steals them at a high rate. He only goes when the timing is on his side, and he only goes when he's almost sure that he's going to pick up a bag. That's a huge sign of maturity from a young player. You see a lot of young guys who have speed get caught stealing all the time, and Mike Trout doesn't fall into that. I think the one thing that Mike Trout is still feeling his way towards is just his approach at the plate. And, you know, you've seen it. You could see it when he's hitting, and you see it in what he talks about. I think he's still fighting himself about when to be aggressive early in count. And I think that's something that he's trying to feel his way through again this spring, is when to jump on that first pitch fastball, when to take a pitch. Mike Trout's a great two-strike hitter. He's comfortable hitting with two strikes. He's got a nice short swing. But he was in two-strike counts, I want to say off the top of my head, probably the fifth most times of anybody in baseball last year. When you're constantly hitting with two strikes, that's when you're setting yourself up for strikeouts. And I feel like the one thing that Mike Trout's still trying to figure out is, when am I going to be aggressive early in counts? When am I going to jump on the first pitch? And, you know, so far this spring, he's kind of made more of an effort to be aggressive early. And he feels like even if he doesn't make good contact on that first pitch and just fouls it off, it kind of sets himself up for the rest of the at-bat mentality-wise. I guess it just creates an aggressive approach that he feels like is helping him out so far. But Richard, he's 23 years old. He's still learning his strike zone. He's still learning about who he is as a hitter. And, you know, the only difference between Mike Trout and everybody else is that while he's going through that process, he's still the best player in the game.
Yeah, you know, I got to see Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray play every day at the height of their career. And when it's over, you feel lucky. I mean, he's one of those guys that you're going to be able to tell people, I saw one of the great players that ever walked on the field, and it's a pretty special thing. Great stuff, Alvin, definitely, as always, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks. And I'm joined by Jane Lee, who covers the A's for MLB.com. And today, Jane's going to answer the question, who is Max Muncy? Go.
He is a very promising prospect. One of the better hitters of camp. And he's also kind of making the transition from first to third base and doing so well. I mean, he's made some really nice uses of plays over at the corner there. But really his bat, it's kind of been amazing. He's one of those guys that, you know, maybe at this point might have already been down in minor league camps to get, you know, consistent at bats. But they've kept him around because he just won't stop hitting.
And he is we should point out that he is a Baylor Bear, and we have many ties to Baylor University. You and I, we work for some proud Baylor alums, so we want to throw that in there. And from Keller, Texas, which is near where I'm from. I like this. You know, for people like you and me, Jane, and I think for fans everywhere, these are the kind of deals that we love in spring training, because you come in and you get to see something that you didn't expect, and suddenly it changes as you go forward and you cover the team through the season. Suddenly, going in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, there's this name that can pop up again and again. And isn't that a cool part of what we do?
It really is. I mean, you look at a guy like that and you know, someone like Billy Burns, who just last spring, too. I mean, it was kind of the same thing.
Jane, Brett Lowry is 25 years old, and I had somebody tell me this week, I don't remember if it's a scout or a broadcaster, that said, if this guy can just stay on the field for 150 games, he may put up MVP-type numbers. Now, he has not been able to stay on the field. You know, he's played, I think, 107 games and 70 the last 2 years. What have you seen of Brett Lowry, considering that he's replacing one of the three best third basemen in the game, Josh Donaldson? And are you impressed by what you've seen so far, even though I understand that we're just reaching the meat of spring training for starters? But tell us about Brett Lowry.
No, I mean, he's impressed from the first day. You can hear him before you see him. He's just got that personality where he's always talking, just a ton of energy. And I think it's his energy that's just, I mean, it can be pretty contagious. And I think fans are going to get a sense of that. And he's just, I mean, when he plays the game, he is always going at game speed, no matter if it's spring training or, you know, I'm sure during his winter workouts. I mean, this guy is a competitor. And, you know, you look at him and he's always had such high upside. And a lot of people have compared him, you know, defensively to Josh Donaldson. Now, he hasn't stayed on the field long enough to really, you know, for us to see if that's true. But he's an excellent defender like Donaldson. And, I mean, really, you know, his bat, too, is, I mean, there's not as much power there as Donaldson. But he has a chance to just be, you know, a pretty big force in their lineup. And he's a guy, too, that can hit second. He can hit, you know, third. He can hit fifth, sixth in that lineup. And that's really important for them to have. And if they can keep him healthy, I mean, he'll probably end up being one of the more valuable players on that club if he can stay on the field.
You know, and as we've talked about this before, but every time I look at the depth chart on the A's rotation, I get more impressed because Gray, Casimir, Hahn, Chavez are going to be starters. And then they have Pomerantz, Bassett, Graveman competing for that fifth spot, I guess, and Pomerantz has pitched pretty well. More on that later. And then Griffin and Parker coming off the disabled list. Do you look at this collection of starting pitchers and think, you know what, this could be a special group, and this could be the reason the A's end up hanging with the Mariners and Angels all season long?
Oh, easily. And it's, you know, it's funny because I feel like I say that every year about their rotation, but this year especially, you know, it's not just depth, but it's quality depth. I mean,
right. Any
team can kind of collect a bunch of pitchers, but, I mean, you're watching. You know, I don't know if the A's thought that they'd have this tough a decision. You know, you almost hope just for the decision-making process that some of the guys you're looking at don't have great springs, you know, so you can put them in AAA and to get them ironed out, and it makes your decision a little easier. But, I mean, every guy that's gone out there, you know, all of these starting candidates, and they've all done well. And you know, just when you're thinking, okay, well, Kendall Graveman's going to be in there for sure, then you watch Drew Pomerantz go out like he did yesterday and have a tremendous outing, and you're like, well, they can't leave him out, and you're saying that about, you know, every guy, Jesse Chavez, Jesse Hahn, and Chris Bassett's really the only one that's had, you know, a few stumbles this spring, which leads me to believe that he will probably begin the season in AAA, but even still, they have a tough decision to make, and you know, some of these guys are options for the bullpen, which, you know, they've always said they will take the best 25 guys and figure out their roles later. But, yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, Scott Kazmir was talking the other day, and, you know, he's a guy that's been around the league for a long time, and he said he's never seen such a strong collection of arms. And really, it's just – it's quite impressive. And, you know, you look back and look at how – all these guys arrived in Oakland. Now you're thinking, okay, well, maybe Billy knew what he was doing during that this crazy offseason.
Let's don't say that. Graveman in three starts has allowed one earned run. Pomerantz has allowed two earned runs in three starts. But the number that jumps out is that Drew Pomerantz, probably the outsider looking in as the competition began, has 15 strikeouts in 9 innings. What has Drew done? What's he working on? Why has he been so dominant?
Yeah, I mean, with him, you know, a lot of people call him just a two-pitch guy, you know, with his fastball, curveball, but he has the ability to just take off and put on, you know, speed every now and then. So his velocity is all over the place. And so really he doesn't like, you know, to call himself a two-pitch guy because, I mean, as a starter, it's almost impossible to be in the first place. But, you know, he says he doesn't even know what to call most of his pitches just because he's constantly changing speed and keeping guys off balance. And that's where the strikeouts are coming in. And, you know, I think he's really kind of worked on honing his change up this spring. And he's a guy that, you know, if you watch him, you'll notice he always works out of the stretch. And that just comes from his relieving days. And it's part of his mechanics and delivery and his rhythm. And his rhythm, he's all about rhythm. And, you know, that's what's important to him. And I think just being able to find that rhythm so quickly this spring has really, really helped him. And, you know, he's just keeping guys off balance. And he is a guy that sometimes will throw a lot of pitches. He's not always efficient with his pitches. And I think that's something he's also trying to work on, just getting ahead of guys and, you know, just trusting in his stuff, because, you know, this was a, you know, top prospect at once, a guy that, you know, has been thought of highly, you know, from his days with the Rockies and even when the A's traded for him. And I think you're seeing why. And really, you look at what he did for the big league club last year as a starter, he only had one bad start. And you kind of wonder if he hadn't punched that wooden chair and, you know, gone on the DL and then gone to AAA, what he could have done over the course of the season. And I think the A's are now wondering that too. You know, if we keep this guy in the rotation, what could he give us over the course of the full season?
Yeah, you know, Jane, you couldn't have known it, but you've just the way you answered that question, you gave the course outline for the Earl Weaver Graduate School of Pitching in Baltimore. Work fast, throw strikes, change speeds, and they would have guys throw sub-100-pitch complete games on fastballs. And just by changing speeds and working fast and controlling the tempo. But that's great stuff, Jane. Great stuff as always. And it sounds like it's been a fun camp, and we'll check in with you soon. Thanks. And I'm joined by Greg Johns, covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Greg, I want to begin by asking you about today's roster cuts, today being Friday. And Jesus Montero was one of the cuts. What's the plan for him going forward? And do you think, in the eyes of Lloyd McClendon and Jack Cerenzik, et cetera, that he maybe turned a corner in their hearts and minds with the way he showed up in shape and the way he played? What's the state of Jesus Montero today?
Well, he really, you know, he certainly opened eyes when he showed up with the less, you know, 40 pounds, a big off season. It was not only a mental thing, but a visible physical change with Jesus, and he's done everything right in camp. Didn't hit real well in Cactus League games, and really got sent down today. Not a big surprise. You know, really just needs to play, needs at bats. It wasn't an obvious spot coming in, and certainly nothing opened up for him. I mean, first base is Logan Morrison territory. DH, they brought in Nelson Cruz, and that's where Montero's going to play. He just needs to play first, get more comfortable there, get at bats. And McClendon says, interesting, he said, you know, the message he sent to Jesus is, you know, you got to go down, you got to compete at AAA. You know, you can't just go down there and expect things to be handed to you. And he says he thinks Jesus understands that well. He's going to have to compete for at bats down there. I mean, they got some young guys, Patrick Kivlan, DJ Peterson, they like it. Got sent down also, you know, the first base candidates. And they've got some numbers, they've got some depth in this organization. And, you know, Montero is one of those guys, certainly has got a lot of visibility, a lot of notoriety, but, you know, he's one of the many young guys fighting for playing time, and he's going to be in that mix down in Tacoma to start out.
One of the top young prospects in baseball the last 3 years is Taiwan Walker, and I think you said last week on this podcast, I think the feeling is that his time is now. Well, every time he goes to the mound, it does look like his time is now. And if he's not close to winning the fifth job, he has certainly done everything the Mariners could have hoped for in this camp. Am I wrong about that?
No, I mean he's pitched 12 innings, hasn't given up a run. He's given up only 4 hits, 13 strikeouts. His walks are low. I think 3 walks out of that. Yeah, he's pitching well. He's done everything they want to see on the mound. He remains a young guy. There's some things they want him to work on. They want him to work on his pitch selection. He got in a little trouble last night. Relied on his fastball a little too much, and Rick Waits went out, pitching coach. He had bases loaded, one out, and so you got to mix in some off-speed stuff here. You can't just sit on that heater. And he struck out the next guy in just a wicked changeup. Curve, which is not one of his main pitches all the time. Showed some stuff there. Got the next kid to pop out. Got out of the jam, and they showed a little bit. Part of spring training is not just looking good, but getting yourself out of trouble, because that's going to happen. You pitch at this level, you're going to get in trouble, and he got out of it. Another nice step for him. Certainly done everything he wants, but it's not handed to him yet by any means. Renes Elias, the kid who won 10 games last year and started 29 for him, that's a rookie getting bumped up from AA, and certainly is a guy who deserves a spot in the major league roster, I would think. I mean, he looked good last year. Erasmo Ramirez has been very good this spring. But Taiwan, tough to overlook what he's doing, and he's certainly an up-and-coming prospect and one of the top young right-handers in the game. It's hard to see right now how he doesn't get that spot for me, but I'm not the one making the call, so we'll see how it plays out.
And the great thing is that we're debating which of these three guys should be the fifth starter. You and I know they'll probably need them all before the year's out. The Mariners must be entering these final 2 weeks of spring training feeling like, cautiously, we've got some not just good starting pitching, we've got some depth too.
Yeah, and I think like every manager, every general manager, you bring that up and they say, well, yeah, we need them all.
Right.
Can't get enough pitching, and it's the common refrain. You just can't get enough pitching, and what looks good today can suddenly be not enough in 2 weeks, and we see it with clubs all the time. So yeah, that depth is definitely valuable, and it's definitely what they're looking for. The difference this spring from last year, they probably were similar depth last year, but guys got hurt coming in. Iwakuma was hurt before camp even started. Taiwan couldn't throw much in the spring. James Paxton got hurt two games into the season. Brandon Maurer, that they thought was going to be in the rotation, was hurt all spring. And so that the depth they thought they had last year just didn't pan out. The depth they have this year is all healthy. Everybody's going full bore, and it has been a good camp. It's been that way across all the positions. Their outfield depth is much better. We saw it today. James Jones gets sent down. He played 108 games for him last year and stole 27 bags, and certainly had some tools to be on a major league roster with his speed, but not even really a contention right now because of the depth they brought in with the veterans they brought in Smith and Reggiano and Ricky Weeks now playing in the outfield, and they just have better veteran presence, and that's where you see this club lining up. They're just going to be more veteran this year. McLennan's talked about it last year. He got in games late in the game and look over his bench. He's got a couple of young kids. It's going to be different this year. You're going to have guys that have been there, guys that have proven major leaguers, and that's probably the biggest difference right now in this game.
Brad Miller is going to be the starting shortstop because of an injury. Can you just give us a scouting report? Who is Brad Miller, and what are the things that impressed you in the year that you've, in the now 2 seasons you've watched him play?
Yeah, Brad's a kid that came up, and a good young prospect that won that starting job last year, largely from his bat. I mean, he's a kid with some pretty good pop from the left side. And defensively, I think, he just needs to get a little more solid, a little more consistent. Doesn't always make the routine play. Sometimes he'll make that throw and pull a guy. I mean, he just looks a little rushed at times. And that's where they want to see him get better. Chris Taylor is probably the better glove guy, and Miller's the guy with a little more pop. Taylor gets hurt. Kind of answered that question last week. So Miller's going to be the guy. And certainly, played a lot last year. Had a great camp last year and is having a great camp this year. But didn't get out of the gate well offensively last year, and they ended up bringing up Taylor. And now, this year Brad gets the job by default. It's going to be interesting to see how that played out. But he's a real mature kid. Just a guy that feels like he belongs. He just handles himself that well. He's a smart kid. He's a good and a year older. And he says, "Hey, a year difference." He feels you know, just that much better this year. And I think he's going to be fine out there. It was going to be interesting to see how that played out, but I don't think everything. My sense was Miller was the choice going in, and Taylor was going to have to just do something to beat him out, and as it turned out, it played out the way I thought it was going to, and that Miller's going to be that guy. Taylor, not out for the year by any means. He's going to probably be out for the first few weeks, so that decision was delayed maybe. Miller's going to have to play well to hang on to that job through the course of the year.
So far, all the news is good news pretty much from Mariners camp. Greg, thank you so much. Good stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week. I'm joined by Brian McTaggart of MLB.com. Hey, Brian, I'm looking at the spring training at bats. John Singleton's had more than any other Astro. Can you talk about the thinking into this? And I see the batting average is okay, no power. Overall, what's the state of John Singleton's game, and what do you think the Astros think the state of John Singleton's game is?
Well, I think so far so good. I mean, it's not a surprise he is the most at bats right now because, as we've talked before, so much about the roster construction kind of hinges on what he does this spring. So they've been running him out there every day, and the strikeouts are down. You know, he hasn't hit for power yet, but he is having a nice spring with the bat, and right now he's doing enough, I think, to make this club. And like we've talked about before, if he makes the team, that sort of sets off a domino effect on other guys. You know, Evan Gattis and Chris Carter, where do they play? It all kind of hinges on whether Singleton makes the team or not. And now Gattis hasn't swung a bat in almost a week now or played in the game for almost a week because of a wrist injury. So this is something else the Astros did by getting Evan Gattis, even though when it seemed like they wouldn't know where to play him, is now they protect themselves a little bit against injuries, although it was Gattis who ended up getting injured. Because now they have extra bodies. So if Singleton ends up making a team and Gattis has a problem with his wrist that drags into the season, then, you know, problem solved. Singleton's your opening day first baseman. But the Gattis injury, I don't think serious. So, but, yeah, they're gonna give Singleton every opportunity, and they're going to keep running him out there every day, probably for the next 10 days until they're forced to make a decision on what they have to do with him.
And, Brian, as you've talked to him the last year, has his confidence, could you ever tell? Is he one of those guys that lets you know his confidence is down? And can you tell what it is this spring? Does he feel like he's getting his career piece back together?
Yeah, I think so. He's got he's pretty candid when he talks to you. I mean, he'll wear his heart on his sleeve a little bit. He admits his confidence took a little bit of a blow. It's hard not to when you put up those numbers he did in the minor leagues and they give you a $10 million and then you come up and you're overmatched with the exception of hitting a few home runs. So I think he had to do some soul searching. He realized he's going to have to go about things differently, just take the foot off the gas pedal a little bit, just slow it down. And he said that a lot this spring is, I need to slow the game down. And that's what George Springer said when he came up last year, and he struggled for the first two weeks. He was like, I need to slow the game down. And then finally, when he slowed the game down, he started settling in and became the AL Rookie of the Month for May. What that means to Singleton and what that means to Springer could be two different things, but I think the mindset is there for Jonathan. Slow the game down. Don't try to hit a home run every time. And maybe that's why his power numbers are down a little bit, is that, yeah, he had the power numbers last year, but he didn't do much of anything else. Maybe sacrifice some of your power, put the bat on the ball, drive the ball to the gaps, drive in runs, those sorts of things.
Robbie Grossman has really good spring numbers, and, you know, obviously I don't know how that translates down the road from now, but what would be the role for Robbie going into the season? Let's presume Evan Gattis can play left field. Where does Robbie fit in? Does he get at bats, or does he make the team?
Yeah, if Evan's going to be your full-time left fielder, which I think is ultimately what they want, then Robbie's going to have to compete for a backup outfield job, and he's competing with Alex Presley, who has a little bit more experience. He's got a bigger contract. I think Presley is out of options as well, so that's kind of an uphill battle for Robbie, but Robbie is having a good spring, and if you remember last year, he had a really good spring, was the opening day left fielder, and really struggled out of the gate very poorly and wound up bouncing between Houston and Oklahoma City and finished the season really strong last year. Robbie's got some tools. I mean, he can get on base. He's a guy that puts the bat on the ball. He's a high on-base guy, always has been throughout his whole career. Defensively, he's not a bad outfielder in left field. He'd certainly be way better than Evan Gattis would be in left field. So Robbie brings a lot of things to the table, but by the team going out and adding all the outfielders they added, and even adding Alex Presley last year about this time, there's just a lot of competition now, and maybe Robbie senses that, and that's why he's come out here and had such a terrific spring. But he's going to have to keep it up to make this team. And even if he does, there still might not be a spot for him on the major league roster anyway, opening day.
Colby Rasmus is such an interesting guy, an interesting career. You know, I mean, I think he left a bad taste in some mouths in the Toronto and in St. Louis, but Jeff Luhnow knows him as well as anybody, having signed him originally. What kind of guy is Colby Rasmus, and how is he settling in as the center fielder of the Astros?
Yeah, he seems to be, getting along fine. I mean, you can tell he struck up some friendships with a couple of other guys on the team who are kind of like him, kind of the Southern guys, like the Josh Fields, who's from Georgia. Rasmus is just from across the border in Alabama.
And like yourself, so now let's you're not from Back Bay, Boston, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think he settled in just fine. I mean, I really don't envision him being any kind of issues we saw in Toronto or we read about. I think we've talked before, a lot of guys have come to Houston and found homes that maybe were misfits somewhere else that couldn't fit in the clubhouses. Brett Myers, one of them, even going all the way back to maybe even Jeff Kent was here and he was a model citizen. And even Carl Everett, way back when he was here, he was a model citizen and put up an MVP type season. So Houston's always been kind of the home for guys to come. The media attention is not big. They can come, relax, be himself. Colby's from the South. He's very at home here. He's going to be very at home in Houston. He's got family in Louisiana. So, you know, I think it's going to be a good fit. And if he can swing the bat, that much better for the Astros.
Brian, with 2 weeks left in spring training, what would you say Jeff Luhnow is most pleased about at this point?
Well, I think if you look around at all the competitions they have for different spots, that nothing is really decided yet. And that's because the guys that are going for these spots are all playing pretty well right now. If you look at the bullpen, guys like Joe Thatcher, he's a non-roster invitee, but right now it'd be hard to leave him off the team. And everybody in the bullpen has come out and taken the ball and pitched really well. Even Will Harris, he was a waiver claim. He's come on and he's made a case to be in the team. So you look at the rotation, Astro Wojciechowski, who pitches today, he's done a really nice job going into Friday. Had nine innings, not allowed a run. They're very high on Sam Deduno, or at least they say they are, and he's done a nice job as well. So there's still a lot of competition for the fifth spot in the rotation. And even like we mentioned with Robbie, some of these backup spots, Alex Presley and Robbie Grossman are doing a very nice job trying to make the club. They're making good impressions. Jonathan Villar is playing all over the place trying to make the team. Marvin Gonzalez is doing what Marvin Gonzalez can do. So all the guys that came to camp with something to prove, for the most part, have done a good job trying to prove it. And I think that was one of their goals going into this offseason, was to add enough players to where there's competition so guys can't feel relaxed. They know they're going to have to go out there and try to win spots on the team. Nothing's going to be given to anybody.
And you've been around a lot of managers. What is your impressions of A.J. Hinch? What are the things you like most about him in running this club?
Well, number one for me is just communication with the players. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in that clubhouse that does not know where they stand. And that could be on a day-to-day basis. If you're not sure where you stand, go into his office. The door's open. He'll tell you, and he'll be honest. And he's not going to sugarcoat it. And, you know, I think players want that. I think maybe some players might not want to go in the door because they're going to know he might tell them something they don't want to hear. But one of the interesting things he said before spring camp even started was that that some of the players might not be happy with their traveling during the spring. Maybe they're going to have to make more long trips. Maybe Jose Altuve would have to go down to Jupiter, which is a 2.5-hour drive. And he said, well, if Jose Altuve is not happy with that, he can come talk to me about it. And he's like, if that means I sit down and talk with Altuve for 10 minutes, he said, that's good. That's positive communication, because now we can get a dialogue going. So the communication part to it, I think, has just been very, very impressive. And, you know, he's got a psychology degree. I think he really knows what he's doing as far as the I don't want to say mind games, but, he's been a player. He's had to fight for spots on teams. He knows where the players are coming from. He's got a psychology degree. He knows what's going through their mind, especially these last couple of weeks or spring, where half the people in this clubhouse are wondering, am I going to be in Houston on opening day?
You know, Brian, you know what occurred to me? I watched baseball in the Astrodome before you were even born. What do you think about that?
You know, I'm not so sure that'd be even true, but I'm not as old as I look. It's probably because of my hair, but Astrodome's about to be 50 years old, so you must be going way back.
All right, great stuff, Brian, like always, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks. I'm joined by T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. The Rangers have kind of a weird weekend. playing a couple of games in San Antonio while playing, also playing games back in Surprise, Arizona. T.R., you wrote a great piece on Rupnet Adore, the 20-year-old second baseman. It looks like, just from the outside looking in, this kid has felt comfortable from the moment he came up. Can you just talk about the things in your watching him that you've been most impressed by?
His intensity and his fire. I think that's the one thing that everybody talked about last year. I mean, the guy's, you know, he can hit the ball. He's got a little bit of power. Obviously, he can field it and run a little bit. But he just plays with some serious intensity. He's got a real look about him that, you know, he means business. He loves to be up at the plate. He loves being out in the field. He loves playing the game. And he plays with a lot of intensity.
And the other thing, T.R., and I know we ask, I ask about this every week, can you just kind of give us your read on the depth chart in left field at this point, or, you know, as we get to the meat of spring training?
Well, I hope we're into the meat of spring training because we've been here for a month. You know, it's wide open. I mean, Jeff Aniston made it clear it's wide open in left field. I mean, nobody's really taking charge yet. You know, it's like you said, you know, every day there's somebody new who you could really get excited about. You know, the guy lately was Carlos Peguero, former big-time prospect of the Mariners, got serious power. You know, he's played really well. He's going to San Antonio this weekend. It'd be interesting to watch him and how he does down there. Ryan Ruau still very much in the mix. Ryan Ludwig, you know, wanting to make sure Holson at bats to see how he looks. It's wide open.
And TR, can you? So Derek Collins, I mean, see if I have this straight. He's going to open the season on the disabled list, but will probably be able to take his first turn in the rotation. Now that he's the number one starter, does he? What's the responsibility on him, and how does he shoulder that responsibility?
I'm not aware that he's starting the season on the disabled list. He's pitching today in an A game against Seattle.
Okay,
he should be ready. He should be ready to go once the season starts. He should be at the top of the Rangers rotation. He looks good. He's engaged. He's ready to go. He should be ready to go on opening day or that first week of the season.
Yeah, and TR, a guy like that, does he feel, or do you sense that he feels he has something to prove coming off a year that was, by his standards, injured and disappointing?
Yeah, I mean, the guy wants it bad. I mean, the guy wants to be a great pitcher. He doesn't want to be a, you know, 12 to 15 game winner. This guy wants to be Clayton Kershaw. He wants to be up there with the best pitchers in the game. That's the way he sees himself. And he's that's his goal this year, is to be an ace, not a, you know, not a middle of the rotation guy.
And, TR, right now, with a little over 2 weeks to go in spring training, what would you say? Say, just from your vantage point, what's the best news out of Rangers camp this year? And I know, you know, there obviously been some bad news with Hugh Darvish, but what's the best news?
Prince Fielder looks great. I mean, that's the number one, that was the number one story going in. It's the number one story going out. It's what everybody's watching, and he looks great. He's in a good mood. He's playing hard. He's hitting the ball well. He's swinging the bat well. Far and away, the number one thing he's done well in campus. But Prince Fielder looks good. I mean, this is guys, you're talking about a 40-50 home run guy. I mean, everybody talks about Joey Gallo this, and Joey Gallo's a tremendous prospect, but Prince Fielder's a real proven deal. And if he's healthy, this is the guy that's going to go out there and hit 30 to 40 home runs for you.
Yeah, and you know, as you look at the team, the left side of the infield with Beltre and Andrus, and the right side with Odor and Prince, I mean, you can see the makings of a good offensive baseball team. Do you disagree? I mean, do you think it's with Prince healthy, it's got a chance to be pretty good?
Yes, if Prince Fielder's healthy, it's got a chance to be very good. You know, another big key is Leonis Martín in the leadoff spot. You know, he's had a good spring too, and he looks like he's really embraced that role and is ready to run with it. If you know, this is a guy, if he wreaks havoc at the top of the order. Then you got Shin-Soo Choo in the middle of the order, and, you know, he kind of stretches out the lineup. You know, they need Mitch Moreland healthy and have a good year, too, in the number six hole. But I think a lot of this lineup depends on how well Leonis Martín takes the leadoff spot.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch, and watch his which of the young starters emerged during the year. I mean, I think the Rangers have a chance to be good, but that's why they play the games. Okay, TR, appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com.